to the No BS Short-Term Rental Podcast, an unfiltered look into the global vacation and short-term rental industry.
I'm Mateo Bradford.
And I'm John Stokinger.
And this is our podcast. We bring the right people to the table at the right time, giving you an inside view and take on the short-term rental industry like no other podcast can.
Good morning, Mateo. How are you, man?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
I am good. We have an amazing guest today. We are recording a day later than normal because our guest has a little cold, but went from 70% yesterday to 80% today. So we're recording. I'm excited about it. How was your weekend? Did anything exciting happen over the weekend?
The 49ers won. It was an amazing football weekend. Life's good, man. 2022 is feeling refreshed, feeling ready to get back to a lot of wonderful things, traveling, etc.
So. Me too. Dealing with all these the ups and downs and the variants are popping their ugly head and making things difficult, but I think we're gonna be all right. I'm excited. Definitely not a gloom and doom year by any means. I feel pretty good about it.
I'm in that it's not going to be. Absolutely.
Yeah. Knocking on some wood too. Yeah. I'm going to knock on a little bit right here. But I want to go ahead and introduce our guests. I don't want to sit here and waste too much time bantering back and forth today. Today we have the president of CTG Advisors and Olin Realty Group, Jacoby Olin, joining us. Thanks so much for joining us today, man. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm doing pretty well. Feeling a lot better today and happy to have a good conversation with you too.
Good. Well, we're glad you're at 80%. You know, next time we'll get you back when you're at 100 and we can kind of revisit this maybe later in the year. The reason, you know, obviously there's many things that we want to go ahead and talk about, but you know, you had a pretty fantastical year. With some of the things you accomplished with CTG Advisors, we want to go ahead and get into maybe we kind of touch on that briefly, but then kind of get into your story of how you kind of got into this. But you know, what were the number? How many you put a number out on social last week? And it was like, was it 184 million? What was the number exactly that you helped get across or deals you negotiated?
Yeah, so it was, we did right around 20 deals overall for 2021, and it was just north of 180 million. And that was a mixture of short-term vacation rental property management companies, technology providers, and then some of the kind of asset portfolio acquirers, real estate acquisitions.
That's amazing. I know you can't talk, some of these are still deals in the works and, you know, they're, you know, you're not allowed, you know, they're under NDAs, what you can talk about, what you can't talk about. What were a couple of the that you can talk about, some of the deals that you can mention?
Yeah, sure. And so much of them are confidential because there are some buyers that like to do kind of press releases or I call it be kind of loud about their acquisitions. And there are other buyers that are quiet about it and are brand light. And there's pros and cons to both, but we did some deals with some of the larger players, the Vacasas, the B-Trips, some of those deals. We also did some deals with some private equity groups in the industry, some venture backed, and then just some kind of like strategic acquirers that were some of the larger regional players that were acquiring some smaller operators in their markets. It was a fun time. And we got to do some stuff all the way out in Hawaii to Florida and everywhere in between and just got to learn. And yeah, it was fun. It was a good year. And and it was a banner year for pretty much most companies in this industry. So like the deals were strong deals on all ends. There wasn't, there weren't bottom feeders happening. There weren't any distressed acquisitions.
But do you see that? Do you see that on the horizon? Like, you know, we were talking to Mike, you know, Harrington of Carolina Retreats, you know, last week actually, and, you know, talking about some of his acquisitions, some of the things that he's been doing. And, you know, right now he's, you know, it's strong. And so there's no real, you know, but when do you see, and do you see that changing in the future at all?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question right there. Or I guess in today's climate, the billion-dollar question. I listened to that episode and it was great. I have a ton of respect for Mike, and I would echo kind of a lot of things that he said. I think in the, funny enough, a short aside, I played college baseball as well, and I know he talked about that quite a bit, and I thought that was funny. And so if I use some baseball references, I apologize on that. But as far as our industry as a whole, I truly think we're in the early innings of a bull run. Now that doesn't mean not to spend time doing diligence and be smart about future plays, but we currently have more interest and exposure on our industry than ever before. And that means we have more more guest demand than we've ever had. We have more second homeowners looking to buy homes. We have more real estate investors than ever before. We have more institutional investors than we've ever had. And we have more entrepreneurs than ever before. And all of those are a recipe for just strong growth. And granted, 2021 was absolutely bonkers, to be completely honest. I'm sure you guys saw that as well. But our industry, we're kind of fortunate enough to have a slight glimpse of the future based on advanced reservations and the booking windows and stuff of that nature. And many of the companies that we're talking to are showing better advanced bookings than they had in 2021. And 2021 was their best year ever. So I can't speculate too far in the future, but I'm pretty bullish on the next 12 to 24 months. As long as there's not like an external factor that might kind of pause it, whether that's political or some COVID variant or something of that nature, which, I mean, we saw that firsthand 2 years ago. But yes, I am definitely bullish on the industry for sure.
That's amazing. And it definitely, you know, it duplicates what, you know, what everyone is thinking that pays attention to our space right now. You know, the majority of the people are feeling the same way. And, you know, it's that, you know, you're saying 12 to 18 months, and then in 12 months, you might say 12 to 18 months again, because, you know, at that time you can make a better, you know, analysis of what's going to be happening in the future. Looking at your resume on LinkedIn, you know, you came in, you're the, you know, co-founder president, back in, you know, just 2018. I mean, truly, you know, I want to hear more about, back alley diner. Let's talk about the back alley diner. What is this? And I, you know, I'm curious to let's, how did you get to where you are today? You know, this is it's a family business. Correct. Like to where you are today, but like everyone gets into our space their own way. You know, I mentioned this, you know, probably 30 times now of the 36 episodes we've done. You know, I used to sell hardwood lumber. I stumbled into the industry. You know, Mateo has his own story that stumbled into the industry. How did you find yourself where, what you're doing today? And as not only find yourself there, but as a leading mind in the M&A space.
Sure. And thank you for the back alley diner reference. Long live bad. I'll get to that here in a second. I think my story is probably a little unique that I was actually one of the ones that was kind of born and raised in this short-term vacation rental industry, except there wasn't a thing called short-term at that time. In the late 80s, and I grew up with my brothers, like in the panhandle of Florida, like taking trashes out and taking sheets off beds and having no idea what I was doing. I thought my dad worked in hotels. And I look back on those times and kind of laugh at them. Because I mean, that was like the beginnings of the internet, and there wasn't Airbnb or VRBO, and it was a simpler time. But so definitely I was kind of raised in this industry. Super fortunate to have my father was kind of one of the earlier pioneers of the vacation rental industry, and worked his way up and was the last CEO of Resort Quest, which was a public company in the late 90s. And so I was fortunate to do that.
By your dad, since we're here, we're talking James Olin, correct? I just want to make sure that we can name drop here. He is your dad.
He's my father. Yes, unfortunately, we look very much alike. he's my father. Awesome guy. And then, we're all of us Olins are in the industry in one faster or the other. I've got my oldest brother Ryan. I have a ton of respect for him. He's an absolute stud. He's the COO and part owner of Real Joy Vacations down in Florida. They manage like, I don't know, 1,300 condos and homes. So easy, pick up the phone and call if I ever have a question about something real quick. Now I've got another brother that works with us here at CG as an analyst, and is just an absolute stud. So did college, and then my father and mother, they told us, they're like, we'll support you guys in anything you guys do, as long as y'all don't do anything with F&B. Do not get in the food and beverage business. It is crazy, and the margins are terrible. So what happened was us three boys, we all got an F&B in one way or the other, because that's what you do to your parents. Yeah. So my middle brother and I, after college, we opened up a restaurant and bar in downtown Nashville. And how that came about was honestly a little bit of that inside baseball, where he was at that time dating a girl whose father was the owner of the restaurant and bar. And we knew that he was looking at kind of getting rid of it. So we took over. We thought that would be super cool. We thought it'd be easy and all of that stuff, and had that. And that was the birth of Back Alley Diner.
So this was an FU with F&B
concept. Yep. So we did that, and right out of college, I thought I knew everything. I thought I was going to become a millionaire doing that and all of that good stuff, and learned so much along the way. I learned that I didn't know much as well along the way, which was pretty cool. And we had that for just shy of a decade. I have so many fond memories of there. I met my wife during that time. Over the years, I started kind of thinking like, is this what I want to do for the rest of my life? Do I want to be a restaurateur in my 30s and 40s and going up? And thought long and hard and was kind of looking at many different options. Was studying to become an actuary, actually. Wow. Kind of a complete 180. And
hold up, man. We're not going to let that go. You were studying to become a what?
And so
for those out there who don't know, that's like one of the most insane positions to ever. It's like forensic accounting on a whole different level. It's a science for sure. Not for the faint of heart or the faint of, you know, the ability to work with numbers. So for all of those, we don't know. I want to hear about this. How's this?
Correct.
Who wakes up says they want to be an actuary?
I didn't do enough research, I guess. I was lucky to be gifted with some math skills and really enjoy kind of digging in to two different problems and trying to solve them. So I at one point I was going down that for a couple months, but actually my oldest brother at that time had gotten back into the industry, and then my father was doing C2G full time, and they basically convinced me, like, hey, you don't need to go stand behind a desk and crunch numbers all day, like, come join, get back in the industry, and let's keep this going. So talked with my wife, and we decided that I'd make the jump back in. And I spent a couple years kind of shadowing my father and just kind of being mentored and learning as much as possible. And then, and then 5 years ago, I hopped on full time doing M&A at C2G, and just been kind of hustling ever since.
So let's talk about this C2G.
That's a great story, though. I
love it.
I love that story. I think I don't want to overshadow, I think too often we take for granted legacies, and we come from a business of, legacy businesses, right? If you look at the root of vacation rentals and how that, the satellite companies that have come on to that, oftentimes you hear kids don't want to go into the family business, even if they land into it later. But it's inspiring to hear that you actually, had this opportunity to come back in, work with your dad, spend time, learn, and to transition that into success. And what you're doing today is just fantastic. I don't want to overshadow that. I think it's an important part of your story.
Thanks. And I'm incredibly fortunate and blessed to be able to kind of have mentors that were also family members to help me, guide me throughout that process.
Tell me about the C2G. What does that stand for? It's interesting. I like it. I'm just curious. What is the C2G?
So that stands for cradle to grave. Sometimes grave can have a negative connotation, but we don't entirely see it that way. But basically, we like to hold our clients' hands from the beginning of the deal, from the cradle until when we put that deal to rest at the end, to the grave. And so that's kind of how it was created, and what we kind of, some of the services that we do for our various clients, whether they're buyers or sellers or developers or whomever, like we're here to hold their hand throughout the entire process as much as they need us.
I love that. So it's the whole journey. From inception of the journey to the close of the journey, C2G. I love that.
Talk to me about that. Like, how does that differentiate you from other people in the space that do the same things? I get the concept, but what is it that brings people, and keeps people to you, right? Because deals die, but other deals pop up, right? So assuming that you're bringing, you're looking to create, reciprocal business and relationships, what is the C2G kind of philosophy for doing that? Why are you guys?
Yeah, good question. And one of our ways that we feel that we can differentiate ourselves is our little niche that we've kind of picked out within the industry is primarily representing buyers and representing companies that are looking to grow through acquisition instead of representing sellers. Now, that doesn't mean that we won't also represent sellers. So typically in a year, we'll do 70% of our deals are representing buyers and 30% are representing sellers. Mm-hmm. And so with our various buyer clients, we'll talk to them about, and we'll create an investment thesis with them. And basically what that means is we'll talk to them about different geographies or locations that they're interested in expanding into. And then we'll talk about the different types of companies they might be interested in, whether they're upmarket, four bedroom plus homes, or condominiums on the beach, or whatever the number may be, or like a minimum threshold of units or something like that. And then we've kind of nurtured and massaged a lot of these relationships over the years with various sellers. And then we'll start reaching out to the various sellers and kind of putting the deal together and finding a good partner for both parties. Because with these property management companies, it's such a cautious type of, you don't want to rock the boat as much as possible. And these sellers have created these strong localized brands. And as a buyer, and buyers, they make mistakes all the time, but as a buyer, you kind of don't want to upset that apple cart, and you want to make sure you do the best deal possible moving forward. Because yeah, the assets of these companies are these sometimes fickle contracts with homeowners that can be canceled within a 90-day whatever, right, termination period.
So keeping that secure, and whether it's branding or whatever it may be, I like that analogy of upsetting the apple cart, and like you're coming into, you're purchasing a brand and existence, a relationships, and how do you go ahead and maintain, and are you maintaining the team? Are you starting fresh? There's so many different pieces to that. I'm assuming that, what you're doing is more than just, the sales process, but there's a part of they're advisors, part of your CTG is like advising on best practices, correct?
Yeah, no, totally. And with the employee part, we're at a time in the industry where pretty much most buyers and sellers are going to be aligned there. Where both sides in most deals want to keep the majority, if not all, employees. Staffing's so tough right now, and people realize like the employees are the backbone of these companies. They're everything for their relationships with the homeowners and for the operations. So there's that is a key component right now. Yes, and yes, with the advisory part, if we got a name for. If C2G Advisors got a name for every deal we did, like it was an atrocious 3 months post deal, like we wouldn't be around kind of doing deals anymore in the industry. So our main job is honestly trying to find two good partners to come together and make sure that the 3, 6, 9, 12 months post close is as smooth as possible for all parties.
I love that.
I got a question for you. So, with everything you mentioned something earlier where you said, we're at the kind of infancy and at the beginning of where we're going within this space. And it's chaos right now, right? Because you have all these new parties who have come in. You got private equity and all the funds that are investing. And you have all of the companies who are growing and scaling in these completely new and professional ways that haven't been done very much, right? So with the success of your business and what you're seeing, what does the future look like? What's that runway look like over the next, I won't go too far out, maybe 2-3 years. What are you seeing with your success and what you see on the horizon? What does our industry look like?
Whew. That's a robust.
Yeah, I think John forgot to tell you to bring your crystal ball and all the other stuff, but we're definitely digging in. But seriously, from your
venture, I'll take a peg at that. Sure.
Yeah.
So I think that, the pie of our industry is getting bigger in all different directions. And what I think that means is that there is currently more business models happening in our industry. And I think Mike even alluded to this in the previous podcast, these kind of the PropCo and OpCo plays, these asset owners, they're coming in and buying the real estate. And it's happening on the small investor side where people are coming in buying 5, 10, 15, 20 homes at a time, which is great. But the institutions are starting to look at these for portfolio buys for 50, 100, 150, 250. And I think that's going to be a whole niche of the industry that is going to be happening and is currently happening. That's going to be super interesting with what that does. And if you look at just say an adjacent vertical, the long-term rental build-to-rent companies, that 5 to 7 years ago, the largest players had hundreds of units or hundreds of homes in the U.S. Now the largest 5 or 6 players have 80,000 homes each in the U.S. So that the acceleration of that is absurd. And right now, some of the largest asset owners in our industry have hundreds of homes. Mm-hmm. So I think 5 years from now, could there be 5, 6, 7 REITs and institutional funds that have 50,000 homes? Yeah, I think there's a good possibility that's going to happen. What does that mean? Are they going to have exclusive partnerships with property managers that are going to manage all of those? I don't know. Or are they going to have different property managers in different markets? Or are they going to have the operations done in-house? All of that's going to be super interesting to see how that works. I really think that's going to be cool how that works. Obviously, the metrics in short-term rentals are vastly different than long-term rentals, and a lot of these people are starting to realize that. So that's one piece of the pie I think is interesting. As there's going to continue being more consolidation at the top, these 250 plus unit management companies, a lot of these legacy companies will keep getting acquired by either some of the larger players or new private equity coming into the industry. That happens as an industry stabilizes. And then there's going to be more fragmentation at the bottom though. Like I mentioned with these entrepreneurs, if you talked 5 years ago, if you talked to 25 different property management companies, you would hear the same story from 23 of them. At some point, they owned a second home in another location. They didn't like how the property manager did. Then their neighbors and friends or whatever asked them, voila, they have a company. That is how our industry's been for the last 25 years. And now the last three years, we're having all these new entrepreneurs coming in and having a thesis to professionalize property management, to focus on business development, to focus on adding supply, to focus on the guest experience. And not to say that legacy companies haven't done that. They're doing that currently as well. Mm-hmm. But there are these newer, younger groups coming in, raising funds that their sole focus is growth there. So they're coming
in with tech, and they're coming in with like the tools to go ahead and to scale, you know, quickly on top of it.
Yep. Yeah.
And with mentorship and seeing, you know, and seeing 3 years ago success stories and being like, holy shit, I could do this too. And they use XYZ, you know, package or you know, tech stack, and they're successful. So we already know what we want to do and how we're going to do it.
So my question around that, to both of you is, you know, is there room for everyone? Because the entrepreneurs on the bottom, you know, you see all this tech that's focusing on hosts and we'll say smaller managers, you know, the 20 and below, the 50 and below, you know, there's a lot of those managers out there, right? Like that's a sizable portion of our business, host/manager, right? And we see the industry really pivoting to address them now. But with all this big money investment on the other side, where does this leave them? Are they just going to be playing the bottom feeder game, you know, kind of picking and scratching to their survival? Or, you know, how do they play well with others? Like, I think that's the interesting part to me, right? I don't know how that fits in and what's really left for them.
I think that, I mean, this, you know, obviously these are my thoughts. You know, I think that these, you know, 20, 30, 40 unit companies, there's a run to where they're successful, they're making money, they're doing well, they're finding success in channels, they're getting distribution that way. And you know, then when it gets hard, like in every business, and I think Jacoby can go ahead and allude to this, there's different tiers in which business plateaus. And it's harder to get past that next tier. And then when you get past that, it's easy to go ahead and scale to $1 million in revenue. And then it's 5 million. And then it's, you know, these are different, you know, tiers that you're going to reach. And each one of those tiers are hard. And each one, you know, and when you get to those tiers, all right, are we going to push through this? Or are we going to go ahead and unload this? Because when you unload it, and especially in today's market, when it is a seller's market right now, you're going to make some money. And you want to just get out of it, but you know, why are you in it?
But what if that's not what they want? What if they're not trying to plateau and plateau and plateau? Like they're good with 50 and they're good with scrapping every year to make sure that 50 or 48 or 52 is their number. And they're good with that. Like,
you see, as long as they're putting heads in beds, I think they're fine with it.
But that's my point, right, Jacoby? Like, there are those. I think there's a good amount of those, right? And I say this shit all the time. Not everybody's trying to be Vicasa. And Harrington said it last week, too. He's got his own kind of model within that space. And I think, does it come to a clashing point at some point where they're all fighting for the same revenue or in the same owners? Or are they changing up their models? Because once you become an asset owner, that takes management or ownership out of the picture completely. Now you're just running from a performance standpoint. Who operates better, right? Who markets better? Who can put more heads in beds, right? You know, and that's, yeah, those are my questions.
So right now, yeah. I don't think we're anywhere near saturation on guest demand or on supply of inventory. Mm-hmm. So I think guest demand's only gonna get better over the next 3 years. So I mean, literally just throwing on Airbnb and Vrbo, not.
Hey, let's not forget Hopper. I'm just putting it out Hopper. There.
You know,
next week we're going live in the, you know.
Right, Hopper, Eddie's, who else?
Yeah, let's not forget.
Yeah.
All good.
But yes, I mean, it's the industry is SMBs. They're small, medium-sized businesses. It's like the US. It's just that the larger players are the ones that get the PR and thus the ones that are talked about the most. But yeah, in every market, there's going to be more mom and pops, 100 units or less, than there's going to be the private equity or the large operator that's at 300 plus properties. It's just at where institutions come in and where a lot of the deal flow happens right now is when John was alluding to with that inflection point is in that when companies get to that like 250, 300 unit range, that's when private equity starts getting interested. Right. And not all units are created equal, but in that couple million of EBITDA, and then those deals happen, and then there's they PR about it. And then there's a new crop of entrepreneurs that are building that, and then they'll replace those units in the next 5 years or so. And so the story just keeps going, but there will always be the SMBs that are building solid, sustainable businesses, and they're living through, and just like Mike was alluding to, and they're great yearly salary, and they might pass that down to their kids and all that stuff. That's just not as sexy as the large deals that are happening, so it doesn't get talked about as much.
I want to talk about, you know, back to CTG, and I want to talk about sales cycle. Just because I'm curious from, you know, I've worked multiple different, you know, sales roles, and, you know, you're an advisor, but you're a consultant sale. Ultimately, you're in sales, you're helping sales. You know, when you first start talking to a prospect or someone that is interested in whether buying or selling, you know, what is the average sales cycle from start to finish, from the first conversation to getting a deal signed? And I know there's many variants that go into this depending on deal size and how, you know, but if you were to put just an average on like the, what comes across your desk, you know, what would that be? Yeah, I'm just curious. So like how long are you, you know, we're talking, that's cradle question. To grave?
So typically, that's a great question. And as a lot of things, it highly depends.
And I understand that.
Being a buyer to become a client is a typically a quicker process, because if we somehow either get introduced to them or we reach out to them or we've had conversations with them at a networking event or whatever, it's pretty transactional. They'll tell us what they're interested in. We'll go over how it might look, fees and all that stuff. And then we'll send over a consulting agreement. Might get that signed immediately. And then we're out hunting for them. I don't know if hunting's the right word there, but helping them source deals. For a seller, that is super just nuanced. So we did a deal a couple years ago in Hawaii. I spoke with that seller for over 3 years, kind of nurturing a relationship. I talked to her probably once a month, once every 2 months. And we would just have conversations, understand. I talked to her where she needs to get to be able to get, because a lot of these sellers have a number in mind
Right.
And they're like, we want to sell for X number. And I'm like, okay, well, you got to get around this amount to get to X number or something like that. So we've had times where it took 3+ years and nurturing that type of relationship. And then we have other times where we talk to a seller and whether they reach out to us or reach out to them or meet them or whatever. And one of the first questions we'll have is a timing conversation with them, because a deal typically takes somewhere in that 60 to 120 days from like start to finish. So we'll be like, do you want to sell this year? Do you want to sell preseason? Do you want to sell postseason? Typically you don't want to sell in the middle of season just because it's chaos. So we have other deals that, yes, where right when we speak to them, they're like, yes, I want to sell in 3 months. So we're like, okay, let's get this papered up and let's start the process ASAP, and everything in between. So that's a long way of saying I don't have a good answer for you.
and that's what I was trying to get out of it, is there is no really great answer. But what is interesting, and it always comes back to, and I think this is in general in consultant sales and every aspect of business based on relationships. You know, you worked, you know, 3 years, you know, there's deals that that I'm just now getting or just got at track that were relationships I built when I first came in the space. And that did, you know, it's just, and it's, we're in a relate. I think most sales are in a some sort of relationship industry, but I think our real estate and vacation rental and short term, like this, it's even more like, who do you trust? Like who do you, you know, have you built that relationship? You know, it's pretty interesting. And I love that, you know, I love hearing stories of the 3 years of you know, when you first meet somebody and they're first interested, and then, you know, a deal finally closes 3 years later. I love those.
Yeah, no, I echo that for sure.
What's the next, who, okay, crystal ball again. Who, and you don't have, you know, if you know, then, and you can't say, then you can't say, but like, who's going to make the next big splash in news? As you know, obviously we're talking bigger companies here, and we're not talking SMB. Who's going to make the next big, like, oh shit, that just happened?
I think there's going to be a couple of relatively large kind of private equity transactions that are going to happen in the next, that are going to be announced in the next couple of months. That'll be interesting. Some new entrants to the space. That'll be interesting. And then likely some of the bigger players are likely looking at continued growth.
Okay. And they're not hiding it either. They may not be putting the information out there, but they're not being quiet about it either. I think everyone is pretty clear about, you know, from what we've seen, John, right? Like, I think it's fair to say people are pretty bullish on the growth right now of the industry and aren't shying away. I don't hear a whole lot of people saying, oh, you know what? I don't know. It's, I think people are missing some things. I'm going to kind of sit this one out. It's more along the lines of, I think people have sharpened their pens and pencils, and they're kind of salivating at the opportunities that seem to be on the table, which I'm interested to see how this all pans out. I'm excited. I can't wait.
I think we're going to see more kind of technology consolidation happen in the next 12 to 24 months. All the focus is kind of on property management companies. I think we'll see some more of that with there being several different vendors in each kind of service. I think there might be some more of that. And I know we saw that a couple of years ago with GSV and Habit IQ acquiring some of those. But I think more of that will happen in the next couple of years.
You think there's going to be acquisitions, or you think there's going to be exits, like people getting out of the space?
Merger acquisition. Gotcha. Is what I would think.
What do, oh shoot, I had it on the tip of my tongue, and then I lost it. I apologize. So, okay. So we're talking tech mergers and acquisitions. We're talking, you know, obviously, you know, property managers, you know, okay, I got it now. 180 plus million last year in 2021 for CTG. Are you projecting a bigger year in 2022, or you think you're about to stay in the same?
That's a good question. That potential long-term capital gains increase that people were worried about at the end of 2021 from politics, I think that played a role in some of the larger property management companies willing to sell in 2021 than hold for another year or two. So okay. I would love to be able to beat that, and we're pounding the pavement as much as possible. It's going to be tough, but I would definitely love to. There's only so many of those. So the amount of deals we did last year wasn't a ton more than we typically do. It was the kind of the size of each transaction was right. bigger. And a lot of that is just because 2021 was absolutely phenomenal for a lot of these companies, but there's only so many of those kind of larger companies, and a lot of going back to private equity and some family offices and stuff like that, they will have conversations with them and they're like, we want to buy 10 $5 million EBITDA companies a year in our industry. And I'm like, well, then you'll buy the whole industry in 1 year. So there aren't as many kind of larger companies as maybe in other industries or something like that. So I guess I would love to beat it. I think it's gonna be tough, but yeah, we're gonna be trying to do as much as possible. I mean, the industry is still incredibly, incredibly hot. Yes.
So I had a great question. Actually, you brought up something I want to pick your brain about, that scenario you just gave. You know, how much of what you do is educating people to the reality of what our business is versus what they've heard or what their research has shown or what they think when they're coming into this space, right? You know, talk to me about having to separate reality from the kind of myth. With especially with those types of groups, I don't have you name anyone in particular, but when those are coming to your doorstep.
Yeah, that is a great point. That there is a lot of conversations regarding all of that. I mean, when Airbnb IPO'd, the conversation was everyone called every company in our industry the Airbnb company and all of that, and trying to just explain that that's one of several kind of distribution partners. So that was always an interesting part. And then yes, we had those conversations all the time that there aren't hundreds and hundreds of large property management companies. It's just a fact, but yeah, we have those probably once a month where you got to kind of bring some of these people back down to earth on what our industry is. And yes, we have great margins for it being property management. But yeah, we're an industry of small and medium sized businesses.
Well, and those margins come from good operation, right? Because it could be, we've seen in this industry a lot of kind of inflated, you know, people that look big, that look bold, but when you got to the core of their business, they weren't profitable. It wasn't a path to profitability. They were just running and continuing to run through money and surviving by continuing to get more, but didn't really have a sustainable, you know, profitability model that allowed their businesses to see through to success. That's why they're not around anymore, right? So, you know, I think that's an interesting point, right? When you get into that, like how much, you know, again, business has to be profitable at some point, right? And when you're digging into the numbers, you know, based on your experience, you know, what are those conversations like?
Yeah, and I don't want to kind of sidestep this question too much, but it really depends on what the goal is of the company. And because, yes, in the end, profitability is key. I preach it. Most of the deals we do, every deal we do is profitable companies, all that good stuff. But I do have to caveat that that venture-backed companies, and there's many in our industry, there's many in every industry, the majority of venture-backed companies are not profitable. And yeah. and they're not profitable for reasons. And granted, some of them are worse than others and have worse metrics, but they still shout from the rooftops how great they are. But like the whole point of being venture backed is all about growth and scale. And then and R&D and all of that stuff, building your tech and all of that. And then eventually they think they can get profitable. And it happens when it happens. And some of the largest companies in the world are built that way, but also a lot of them fail. And that's that whole point. I can't really compare that to like a like venture and private equity are completely different. Private equity is looking for profitable companies that are larger. And then there's just strategic buyers that are looking for profitable companies that are smaller or larger or whatnot. But the venture backed is like, it's kind of its own beast compared to the rest of the industry. And there's pros and cons to it. A lot of those multifamily master lease companies got caught up in that kind of craze. And it was, I mean, we were doing quite a bit of work with that too. That was kind of hence why we created kind of a side real estate brokerage company called Olin Realty, because so much of that stuff was kind of blurring the lines of real estate, which is super cool. But greed got involved and developers were getting greedy. Landlords were getting greedy. Some of the venture was throwing crazy money. So the companies had to scale and they were competing against each other in bids for these long-term master leases. So paying crazy premiums above market and then COVID happened. And a lot of them were, some of the troubles happened beforehand. I mean, we saw it in WeWork well before COVID even happened. So, but yeah, there's a lot of innovation happening and with innovation, there's going to be failure but that's going to move the industry forward and just add new cool business models. We're talking to different companies that property management companies that are now doing hybrids of that, with homes and with apartments where they're doing some like base threshold and then some splits that there's so many cool things you can do now, with different homeowners that can keep both sides aligned.
And with different owners, right? And having them be more open, right? I think that speaks to the success of kind of what you've been doing in this space, right? Is having people be more open to that. Whereas, especially on the traditional side, I remember seeing it when we were working at Rented, you know, those old school developers, they weren't having any of that, right? They, you know, profit split, what is this, right? No, they wanted their, if it wasn't their fixed, you know, don't move my cheese. This is what I'm used to, you know, and this is what we're happy with. And if you didn't run that model, you didn't work with them a lot of times. And so it's good to see that changing for sure.
Oh man, I'm having a hard time today. I apologize for my brain farts all day long, but I want to kind of get to a point where we can go ahead and wrap this episode up to at an essence of time. And I want to know, well, first of all, Jacoby, thank you so much for joining us today, man. We appreciate you. There's some pretty amazing insights and we definitely want it. We need to get you back on at the end of the year. I want to know, you know, I want to kind of look back. There's a few people that we interview that you know throughout the year that we definitely want to make sure that we get like a beginning of the year and then like what actually happened. And I think this will be great to have you back on. So I hope you'll join us.
Hopefully if my year's terrible, then I might have to decline, but
we're the no BS. You know, like if you have a shit year, let's talk about it.
Hey, it's shit year, but you're still standing. That's a, you know, it may not That's be a win, be, but it's a win, right?
Absolutely.
Still in the game. Sure. We're going to give you the no bullshit assessment, man, but no. And in all honesty, look, you know, we know actually you just made an excellent point. You don't win all the time. You don't win. It's what you learn from those losses. It's what you learn from not hitting those goals. So, you know, whether you blow the year out or not, we'll love to have you back and talk about it. There's always value there, man, for sure.
But, you know, with that said, you're going to blow it out. I'm not really worried about that. So do you have anything you'd like to leave the audience with today, Jacoby?
I'm just any of the property managers and vendors in our space, just ton of respect for what you guys did and how you kind of thrived through COVID, because I mean, looking back in late March and April of 2020, like that was some scary times, and we don't have the overhead of staff that a lot of these companies did have. And just to see what they've done and what they've overcome, it's just, I don't know. I just have so much respect love seeing that and cannot believe how strong some of these people are to get through that. And that's another reason why I think that we're on a bullish run for the next foreseeable future.
Well said. Awesome. Absolutely. Well said.
Hey, man, I got one more question too. I want to go back to BAD and food and beverage, just because I like to circle things around. So coffee shops, man, like I'm going to open a coffee shop. Is your dad going to tell me to run and get, come on, coffee shops have great margins. Like that's my idea for retirement. Please, should I do it, or are you going to talk me out of it?
Oh man, if you're passionate about it, I say you jump. Definitely do that. Whereabouts are you?
So I'm in Atlanta, but I have business in Portland, Oregon, and in California and some other places. So I'm looking to, I just want a coffee shop because I want it, right? Like I'm not trying to be Starbucks, but hospitality, nothing better than coffee shops, man.
I love it. A little side note for me. My alternate, my F&B dream is to open a pizza shop. And I won't ever do it because I know the competition is terrible, but I can actually toss pizzas. I used to be an assistant manager. I love pizza, man.
Margins and pizza is good. Great. Hey, look,
pizza and coffee. Is that a thing?
It could be.
No BS coffee and pizza shop. You're
right
here.
There we go.
Hey, Jacoby, man, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to go, there will be a link to your website on our page, and we appreciate you joining us. And any property managers or anyone that needs to go ahead and is looking for some advice and has some questions and wants to get involved or is looking to sell, looking to buy, we encourage you to go ahead and reach out to Jacoby and C2G Advising Group.
Links are in the details. And brother, hope to see you sometime soon, man.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. I'll be at Verma in Chicago in April. So if you guys will be there, hope to see you there.
We'll see you there.
Definitely be there.